Next, we have item C, which, as I remind you, came out of the consent agenda. It's now on the discussion agenda. This is the Judicial Branch Administration, the audit report for Judicial Council acceptance. This is an action item, and we have appearing by phone Justice Huffman, who intended to appear by person but had another matter that detained him. I also believe we have Mr. Sean Matroka, Court Executive Officer, is expected to appear in person and address. Thank you, Council. And I'd have everyone also, just for those watching, listening, to state your name on the record. Please start, John.
Good afternoon, Chief. This is John Judnick.
Chief Justice, members of the Council, this is Richard Huffman. I'm the Chair of the Advisory Committee on Financial Accountability and Efficiency. I would like to take just a moment of your time to discuss a couple of items before we get to the details of this particular audit.
Thank you. One moment, Justice Huffman. We'd like to have Robert introduce himself.
Very good.
Thank you. My name is Robert Cabral. I'm an audit supervisor in Audit Services.
Thank you. Please go ahead, Justice Huffman.
And he was the audit supervisor responsible for this audit.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Sorry for talking over people. It's hard to see from here. So, Anthony has three duties as it relates to audit reports. We review all of the audit reports for the judicial branch, including appellate courts, trial court, and the Judicial Council staff. And our task is to make a recommendation to the Judicial Council before the audit is actually accepted. Audits are confidential until they're accepted by the Council, and then they're placed on the public website for public review. We tend to make recommendations to the Council on issues, the systemic problems and other issues that we think are important within audit reports. Well, I must say the vast bulk of the audit reports that we review, we send to you on the consent agenda. Generally, the issues remain within an identifiable range. By the time the audit is presented to us, they've been worked out with the trial court or the entity, and consent agenda is fine. Once in a while, we find a report that either because of the individual issues or a combination of those present some questions that could result in diminished public confidence, we think, in the branch handling of its financial affairs. And with regard to this particular audit, that is the Nevada County Superior Court, A&E reviewed it on February 4th at our closed meeting and discussed it with the audit staff and concurred in the staff recommendation that this be presented on the discussion agenda. And I'll go through very quickly the individual reasons for this recommendation. But I want to say at the outset, in the processing of this case, of this audit through the question of where it fits on the agenda, at one point there was a suggestion that we might be putting these on discussion to either intimidate, embarrass, or coerce the trial court. That's absolutely not the case and would probably be rather shocking to our trial court executives and trial judges on the committee. We put these things up for the Council's consideration because our experience is either sometimes we have system problems, sometimes there's issues with the court that the Council with its staff have been able to work, reach out to the court to provide assistance in some fashion and resolve these issues before they present greater problems. With regard to Nevada County, as you see from the I assume you have a PowerPoint. There's a relatively large number of issues for this, 182 issues. And by the time we got to it, there was only 80 of those resolved. More of them probably have been, but presented an unusual problem for A&E. And more particularly, a number of the issues are in areas that we concur with audit staff, propose a risk of loss exposure, cash collections, manual receipts, segregation of duties and others that pose a risk that any auditor will find and the state auditor would find if they made a review. We also found that there were a high number of repeat issues in the cash and banking transaction and accounts payable area. A particular concern, I think, to the committee members was that part of the problems that the court, as it was related to us, approached some of these issues that they are under-resourced, and I have no doubt that they are. They have confidence in their staff, and we understand that. But it appears that they've made a risk assessment and saying, well, we don't have the money to do these kinds of cash protection things, so we'll take the risk. And we thought that this is an issue the council may want to address. There may be ways to provide some assistance to the court or to assist them, but we think taking risks on cash losses, you don't know if you have a loss until it's already over. So I'm going to turn it over to an audit staff to go through this particular report with you, and then we will at the end recommend you receive this audit and that you take such action as you deem necessary. We don't make recommendations as to what the council should do because we think that's within your area of expertise. So John, whoever is going to speak.
Thank you, Justice Huffman. Good afternoon, Chief, Council members. I'll have a very high-level overview, then I'll turn it over to Robert Cabral, who is the audit supervisor responsible for this audit, to get into some of the details. And then we'll have a couple minutes for Sean Matroka, the court exec, to provide a few comments. The Nevada Superior Court is a small court. 6 authorized judgeships, 1.6 SJOs. They have a long tenured CEO. On the WAFM model, they're at cluster 2, which is close to neutral. They have 58 FTE with 2 in fiscal. The court has 2 locations with 8 courtrooms and a $6.8 million budget in the fiscal year that we reviewed. The overall management summary identifies 6 significant issues. One is in the cash area, the control and oversight of handwritten receipts. That is, in the last 10 years, my highest risk area for the courts as reported annually to SEAC and the Trial Court PJ Advisory Committee. To the court's credit in this area, in advance of what Rob will talk about, the court immediately corrected those issues going forward. The court also needs to strengthen cash handling practices that we identified, improve their review of invoices and the approval procedures on those invoices, and to more accurately and consistently improve the statutorily required domestic violence fines and fees as the court is required to do. And now I'll turn it over to Robert Cabral.
Thank you, John. Good afternoon, Chief Justice and Council members. As I said earlier, my name is Robert Cabral. I'm an audit supervisor with Audit Services. I supervise the audit of the Nevada Superior Court. The on-site audit team was led by Joe Azevedo, who's the senior auditor, and he was assisted with Ed Duran and Lorraine DeLeon, who are auditors out of San Francisco. I want to first start by thanking Sean Matroka, who is the Court Executive Officer of Nevada Superior Court, and his staff. He and his staff were cooperative throughout the audit and provided the information we requested in order to complete our work. During the later stages of the audit, Sean and I discussed over the phone some of the issues to make sure that we were both understood the facts and the issues. And although we agreed to disagree on one or two of the issues, I think that I just wanted to make sure that we were on the same page as far as understanding each other's points of view. Audit Services understands that most courts don't look forward to audits. Nevertheless, they're useful for the purposes of assisting court management and identifying areas where they may be able to improve court operations. An audit is like a checkup of fiscal and operational effectiveness and efficiency. They're kind of like going to the dentist office. You don't really want to go, but you know you need to go to ensure that you can do all you can to keep your teeth healthy. Some dental office visits result in a quick cleaning and a reminder brush and floss daily. Some visits result in recommendations to get a small cavity fixed in order to avoid a bigger problem. And some visits are to take care of a tooth that has become a painful problem. However, some visits identify other problems that are not obvious and not related to your teeth. For example, my wife, who's a dental hygienist and works at a dental office, has found on a few patients that indications of a cancerous growth that the patient did not even realize that existed. Well, audits are somewhat similar to a dental checkup. in that they may be sometimes painful, but are useful for management to identify potential areas of risk and areas where improvements can be made. Nevertheless, management is ultimately responsible for assessing risk and establishing an appropriate system of controls to mitigate and minimize the risk and ensure the mission of the organization is accomplished effectively and efficiently within available resources. With that said, I will now cover some of the issues of concern from an audit of the Superior Court of Nevada. First, our review of the court system to track and monitor causes taken under submission found that it did not have an established process to review and monitor causes taken under submission. As a result, we found that one cause we reviewed was decided 92 days after being taken under submission. Now, the court did acknowledge the weakness and implemented procedures right away to better track and review the submitted causes as required by rules of court. We also found that the court's accounting and financial reporting of financial transactions was not always correct. Because the court had not yet closed its books for the 13-14 fiscal year, we reviewed the prior fiscal year and informed the court of the accounting and reporting issues we found. As a result, the court was able to correct many of these accounting and reporting issues in its latest financial reporting for the fiscal year just ended, 13-14. As for manual receipts, like John said, that's a high-risk area. We found issues ranging from weak oversight of manual receipt books to missing manual receipts with no explanation as to what happened to them. The control and oversight of manual receipts is a high-risk area, as other courts with weak oversight over manual receipts have had situations where staff issued manual receipts to customers and pocketed the cash, and the problem didn't surface until months later. The court acknowledged its manual receipt issues and indicated taking action to strengthen the control and oversight over its manual receipts. We also found other issues in the cash handling areas. For example, too many cashiers had the ability to reverse and adjust payment transactions in the case management system, including their own transactions. Significant amounts of daily cash collections were not being promptly deposited in the bank in order to safeguard the cash. Multiple cashiers shared the same cash drawer, making it difficult, if not impossible, to identify and hold any one cashier responsible for any cash shortage. The court acknowledges the risk, but indicates accepting the risk due to the lack of sufficient resources. Also, we found many segregation of duty issues, including individuals who can open mail, enter payments, and set up new accounts with little to no oversight, a lack of review and approval of payment transaction reversals, and a non-court employee who could reverse her own payment transactions without any review and approval by the court. During the daily closeout process, we found that end-of-day collections are not counted in the presence of another supervisor employee, and that the closeout and balancing reports are not signed to indicate supervisory oversight and verification of the closeout process. When cases go delinquent, including payment plans, we found that they were not referred to its outside collection agent promptly as required per court policy. Also, DMV holds were not always placed on delinquent accounts to assist the court with its collection efforts. We also found that no record is kept of when the vault combination was last changed or who knows the combination. Also, the combination is not changed when an employee with knowledge of the combination is no longer employed by the court. At one court location, the combination to the keypad box containing the key to the safe had not been changed in 8 years, and nearly all the staff knew the combination. In the information systems area, we noted user access control issues. And although it was it did have a business continuity plan, it had not tested the plan to ensure its plan and backup recovery site functioned as expected. In our review of the banking and treasury area, we found that the court does not fully reconcile its bail and civil trust accounts to its CMS. In the procurement area, we found that the court did not always prepare purchase requisitions, did not always enter encumbrances in the fiscal system to reserve its fund balance, and did not update its authorization matrix to reflect managers and supervisors who the court indicates were authorized to approve purchases. Also, purchases made with purchase cards were not always pre-approved by somebody with the appropriate approval limits. travel expenses were not paid using a purchase card that is designated just to pay for travel expenses. And some purchase card purchases were for snacks and supplies for non-sequestered jurors and gifts for children. I know that's a bad one. In the related accounts payable area, if some invoices did not indicate payment approval signatures before processing for payment, some invoices were signed approved for payment by individuals not authorized to approve invoices for payments, and some invoices were approved for payment by the same individual who made the purchase. Also, many of the invoices were paid without matching the invoice to the terms of the procurement agreement or obtaining verification that that acceptable goods or services were received. With one invoice payment we reviewed exceeding the agreed upon payment amount. The court also paid for unallowable grand jury expenses and juror parking. Finally, a few of the vendor addresses on the invoice did not agree with the vendor address in the fiscal system. In our review of domestic violence fines and fees, we noted that the court did not impose the domestic violence fee when applicable or impose the outdated fee amount. Also, some other fines and assessments were not made as required by statute. Now, Sean Matruka, Court Executive Officer of Nevada Court, would like to comment.
Good afternoon, Chief and folks. After that, it's kind of hard to follow that act. I know Justice Huffman's summary, while it was likely prepared by the gentleman to my right, really paints a fairly grim picture. And I appreciate the opportunity to come here today to address all of you, if for no other reason, to make an attempt to assure you that we're not as messed up as we sound. All of the major items, with one exception that our audit team has identified, we have corrected. And as of today, we've corrected, addressed 152 of 182 of those audit issues. We have 14 left that we are working on. The latest will be complete by the end of July of this year. There are 13 items on the audit report that we believe we have no ability to address, either authority or financial resources. For instance, we have no way to install intrusion detection systems in our buildings. We have no way to install fire suppression systems in our buildings. We have a lot of issues related to lack of resources, which every other court in this state faces. As it happens for us, we welcomed these gentlemen and their team to come to our court because we have had a 25% reduction in staff over the last 6 years, as many courts have. We have had a significant turnover in our experienced staff. All of our operations supervisors and our accounting manager and many of our other leaders in our court have retired within the last year and a half. We also implemented a new case management system a little less than 2 years ago, and many of the issues that they rightfully cited in the report stem from our growing pains with that new system and trying to get it configured properly so that we comply with all the policies and we have appropriate accounting controls in place. The bottom line is we're not asleep at the switch. We have made some decisions in our court to apply the limited resources we receive to maintaining an acceptable level of access to justice in our county. And some of the things that have taken a decrease in support via our resources have been on the administrative side. We've cut 25% of our staff, but we cut 50% of our accounting staff. We cut more than a third of our IT staff. We cut a third of our human resources staff. Our operations staff has endured a 10% cut. Our self-help centers were the last element, last department in our court to receive any cut, and that was only in the fifth year of budget cuts because we felt that their function was so important to ensuring access to justice in our county. We could certainly have made the decision to close our satellite court in Truckee. We would have dealt with, you know, a predictable outcry from the large portion of our county population that lives on the eastern side of the Sierra. But we would have been able to maintain all of the staff required to help us comply with all the policies and maintain appropriate financial controls had we done that. It would, however, have made a tremendous hit to our ability to provide access to justice for probably one-fourth of our county's population. And I know other courts chose to do that with satellite courts. We chose not to. We still have every courtroom open in our county 5 days a week. Our public counters are open 8 hours a day. We did, through this downturn, cut 1 hour a day in public counters. If we were to implement with our current facilities the one big thing that we haven't done, and that is separate change drawers for our clerks who accept payments, it would require us, and this is not an exaggeration, it would require us to cut 1 hour a day from our public counters. Because we don't have separate change drawers. Every clerk who takes payments would have to have an individual cash bag, which has to be balanced out at the end of the day by two people. I don't have enough people to do that with our current arrangement. So I realize I have probably taken more time than I should have. I want to assure you, we are on top of this. We are not actually surprised by the majority of this. That's why we welcomed these guys. We needed their help to help us to fix the problems we knew we had that came from this storm of all of these things this branch has endured over the last 5 or 6 years. We're on the upturn. So thank you for the opportunity to address you, and I'm sincere in my assurance that we are on top of this. And I will be quiet at this point.
Thank you, Sean. And I'd just like to add, Sean's court is a small court, but many of these issues and many of the concerns and the resource issues are exactly the same at other of our smaller courts. The resources that they have to enable them to keep their doors open, to keep access to justice, are business decisions that the court execs make in conjunction with the PJ, and those are business decisions that audit recognizes, but our position is we audit in accordance with policy while we also recognize the court's position. With that, the A&E Committee and Judicial Council staff recommend that the Judicial Council accept the pending audit report dated July 2014 entitled The Audit of the Superior Court of California, County of Nevada.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Sean. Thank you, Robert. Mary Beth Todd, and then Justice Hall.
I'll defer to Justice Hall first. I know he reached out to the court.
Thank you, Mary Beth. Thank you, Chief. This is more of an observation than anything else. We have our trial court liaison program where those of us who are assigned to courts, we go out and talk to our courts, and then we report back to the council, and we hear details such as this over and over and over again. And I just find it interesting, sad, but interesting, that over and over and over again, matters that simply do not occur to so many people that are offshoots of the reduction, the severe reduction in funding, have real-life, day-to-day consequences that require real-life, day-to-day, very, very difficult decisions. And this seems to me to be entirely consistent with that, and I keep hoping this information will be more broadly known, and maybe our funding will continue to improve. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge Herman.
I just like to add, you know, my court recently, I think last year, went through a similar audit, and you know, at the end of the day, it's a healthy process. It taught us a lot, and I just like to say. I appreciate the way you've approached the audit and the information you've provided us today in terms of the under difficult circumstances at best your court's response to the audit in a positive way. So thank you.
Thank you, Mary Beth Todd.
So I too wanted to thank Mr. Matroka for coming today to let us know what's going on in his trial court and what's some of the issues that are driving the difficulties courts are having performing their administrative functions as we struggle to protect our operations and the access to justice. People don't see that on the outside. They don't realize that the court is being opened and staying open, notwithstanding these severe budget reductions, at a cost. There is a cost. Because of our passion and our commitment to access to justice, that cost is behind the counter. It's back in the back offices where courts are really struggling. And I think these audits are starting to, I think we're going to, unfortunately, start to see more and more of this. I appreciate the court's commitment to resolve the issues, to work to the greatest extent possible. I appreciate John and Rob for working with the court. I had a conversation with John about, you know, what do we do? What do we do for these courts? I was very uncomfortable with this presentation. I was one of the ones who suggested it go on consent, and the reason I did that was when I asked the question, what are we looking for from the council when we bring these? There wasn't a real answer. So I think what I said, and I hope it wasn't misconstrued, was what I don't want is the appearance of a public shaming. You know, and John and I had an extensive conversation about that, and we agreed that that is not the intent here, but that there could be that appearance when we're bringing it to the council with no real recommendation for a next steps. And with that in mind, I would propose that EMP work with A&E to talk about what do we do when we have an audit, we see a court that's struggling, it's clear that they need some assistance. That's not the role of the auditor, and I understand that. And whether it be A&E, whether it be SEAC or the presiding judges, that we have some constructive steps that we know will be taken when we see there's a court that is struggling in this regard, to provide some assistance, to see what we can do to help them out, to work through how they might submit a request for alternative procedures to provide some relief that they need. And so I would just like to recommend that you know, going into the future, that when we have steps we're going to go through when we see this, and so when it comes back to the council, we're reporting positively on what we're doing to help those courts out.
Thank you, Mary Beth. Is question to your comment, is that something that is better handled among the experts, meaning SEAC and the trial court presiding judges advisory committee? It seems like this is a topic everyone here understands Nevada County's position. It's emblematic and symbolic of everything that's happened to the branch in the last 5 years. So all of us understand the hard choices that were made by the courts to keep the doors open. And it seems to me that it would most be helpful to have that discussion that you just referred to amongst the court executive officers who have many solutions and alternatives, and the PJs as well.
Speaking on behalf of the court executive officers, we'd be happy to provide some sort of an interim process where we can reach out and work with courts that you know, where the auditors are finding, you know, a substantial number of issues. And I can't speak for Judge Slough there, but
I, on behalf of the presiding judges, would echo your comments, your thoughts, and your goals into the future. I would not want to be a court, and I very well could be a court that could sit and undressed like this today, uncomfortable, personally unnecessary. And I respect you very much, Mr. Matroka, for sitting there calmly, impassionately, and explaining the bigger picture. Thank you.
Thank you.
Judge Rosenberg and then Judge McCabe.
Just have a quick observation. Thank you, Chief, and then a quick question. The observation is that trial courts are independent entities, and we will see them deal with these issues independently based on local concerns and local situations, and that's the way it should be. The situation in Modoc is different than Nevada, different than San Diego, et cetera, et cetera. We're all dealing with the situation of 5 pounds of potatoes being stuffed into a 4-pound bag, trying to figure out how that's going to work. I really don't think these audits should come to the council, and if they do, they should be on the consent calendar, period, end of sentence. These audits are meant to assist the local courts we don't really need to, there's no purpose in bringing it here to a public airing, because ultimately all the auditors are doing is saying, here are best practices, here's what you could be or should be doing, and the local courts take it and respond to it. Finally, my question, it's really directed to the audit staff. The CEO of Nevada mentioned, and I've forgotten what they were, two items that they cannot implement, I imagine because of physical constraints of the building, I imagine. Is that a subject that auditors raise when, for example, you recommend putting in a fire suppression system, sprinkler system, and it would be physically impossible to do it in a particular building? You still go ahead and make that recommendation?
Well, our job is to identify areas that the court may be at risk at, or weaknesses and controls, and you know, it's
fire
it's really,
suppression system.
Well, it's, I mean, if you had a fire in a file room and you lost all your records, you know, and you didn't have a backup or anything like that, then you know that's up to the court. But our job as auditors is to identify areas where courts may be at risk, and if it's a fire suppression system that they don't have, and their records are in jeopardy of maybe some fire started and losing all their records.
Clearly, but
they
what
can
if
do
the
that.
Court physically cannot do it?
Well, there's other ways to do it. I mean, if you image your records, you can store them off-site. If you just have paper records and decide to keep paper records, then you probably want to get something to mitigate potential fire.
Okay.
But that's up to management to decide.
Thank you. Judge McCabe.
Contrary to my nature, I'm going to keep this brief. Sean, number one, you're talking to folks that understand where you're at, where you're coming from. We appreciate the audit committee's work. It's there to point things out, to keep us out of trouble, best practices, et cetera. On the other hand, it speaks volumes for you to come here to talk to us in the manner that you did. In the situation that you did, don't do that. And so I'm comforted to know that you're passionate about your court, your reputation precedes you, and you are consistent and fulfill that reputation by appearing today and discussing quite calmly those issues. So to you, thank you very much.
Jim Fox and then Rick Feldstein.
I would analogize this similarly to what occurs with school districts, which is, Judge Rosenberg said, the courts are independent. School districts are also independent. When they get into financial difficulties under the State Department of Education, they have an entity called FICMAT that comes in and looks at the underlying source of the problem and comes up with recommendations for solutions. Frankly, the solution is not that difficult. The courts are under-resourced. And that should be documented. This audit should be used to document how much the impact is when they are under-resourced and the risks that they are at. So I would suggest that this audit could be used as a sword to leverage the additional resources that we've been denied.
Thank you, Jim. Rick.
Well, I come from a similar-sized court as Sean does, and I've been through the audit several times. Found them to be constructive and helpful, and it is like going to the dentist, but having John and his staff is a good dentist, and I appreciate that. But I'm also aware of Sean's position, because I think it's faced every day by CEOs throughout the state. You know, John rightfully pointed out the risks involved and some of the things that are occurring, and he's absolutely correct in that. But unfortunately, because of lack of resources, CEOs and judges, presiding judges, are in a position of having to weigh risks and trying to figure out what the worst risk, the worst case is. And it may be a case, and we all make these sorts of decisions, do we risk a receipt and a potential theft down the road, or do we risk denying somebody access to a restraining order and perhaps putting their life in danger, or other sorts of risks involved. A business is trying to get a civil case through so that they can remain in business. Do we risk that? And those are really, really tough questions, and I can certainly sympathize with Sean's position and the sorts of decisions he made. I might have made different decisions. I don't know, but I certainly wouldn't want to second-guess Sean.
Chief Justice, if appropriate, I'd like to make a comment when you're available.
Please proceed, Justice Huffman.
All right. This is a, to be very candid, this, first of all, A&E didn't ask for this type of work. It's in the rule of court, and the Judicial Council determined that before an audit can be public, it has to go through us to E&P and then to the Council. If you don't want to hear any in the future, that's certainly fine with us. Mike, this discussion is exactly what, frankly, we were hoping for. Nobody blames the Nevada Superior Court for not having resources or for making conscious judgment. The public needs to know, you need to know, that this kind of problem is out there. Sometimes we've had circumstances where the court had lack of adequate to trained financial staff, and the council directed Judicial Council staff to provide some assistance. We found illegal fees collected at times, and the Judicial Council, working with the various court execs and that, found solutions. If you don't want to hear about these things, we're happy to not tell you, but we think that the problem in Nevada County is classic of the circumstance in which judges are finding themselves and court executives. The fact that you folks have now had an airing of it, you've heard a very eloquent explanation from a very experienced CEO. I thought that's what you're about, but it, again, A&E did not and does not have any criticism of these courts trying to survive. We're simply trying to apply the rules that you visited on us in a correct and thoughtful fashion.
Thank you, Justice Huffman. I, for one, prefer to have the information front and center than to be asked about it by, oh, the Daily Journal 2 days from now. I, for one, think it is a healthy discussion because we all understand the reason for it. And it's not about blame. It's another one of those, this is what has happened to the branch that is not visible to the eye and isn't cured, frankly, by the three augmentations of funding we've had in the last, well, two and hopefully three, in the last couple of years. It's not enough. We have fissures. And the steps really are we need to be aware going forward, conscious of our choices and the liabilities that exist otherwise. But this is a healthy debate, and this is where it belongs. The legislative intent in creating the Constitution, in the constitutional amendment for this council was, when there's a problem, it comes to council, and it shall be ours to fix. All of us understand the choices here. All of us would have made same or different. That's the beauty of a central but unified but otherwise autonomous organization, as is our judicial branch. So this was good for us to hear. It makes us think about the future, and it reminds us that we have deeper issues than only keeping our doors open. And I'm grateful that Senator Jackson and Assemblymember Bloom were here to hear part of this. So I realize the task of A&E. I once had to chair A&E. So I commiserate with you, Justice Huffman, and you bring us hard work with a critical eye, and I thank you for that. Go ahead.
I just said we're pleased to we can really say we do feel the pain of these. A&E is composed of trial court administrators and trial judges, and they fully know. So we will continue to do whatever you ask us to do, but we will continue to at least suggest you discuss things where we think there's an important issue.
Thank you. I agree with you. So at this point, the matter before council is to accept the report for it to then go on to the public website. Are there any motions?
I just have a comment. I mean, if I was asked about this, I would characterize it as one of the most in-depth liaison reports we've had. And following up what Mary Beth suggested, we haven't even gotten into the details of the impact on the morale of staff, and we all know that throughout the state. You know, that's something that we have to be aware of also.
Thank you, Judge Jim Fox.
I move the recommendation.
Second.
Second by Judge Soe. Not seeing any further hands raised for further discussion. All in favor of accepting the audit, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you for being here. Best wishes. We continue to look forward to work with you on these issues, Sean. Thank you, John. Thank you, Robert.
Thank you.